You are listening to inspiring stories of ordinary people doing extraordinary stuff. Welcome to the Doolanders.
Hit it!
That's what I'm talking about.
Wait!
Okay, now, from the beginning.
Hit it, boys.
We are up to the Richie Beno episode.
Oh, what's that?
We've been free. Out of lockdown for a good, couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
The Ring of Steel has come down.
Yeah.
You've got this newfound freedom. What have you done with yourself?
Well, my kids are still enjoying going to school. I'm enjoying them going to school, but my workplace is still locked down. It's professional services is one of the last that'll be allowed to go back into their offices. So unless you can't do your job from home, you've got to stay home.
Yeah. That's okay though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I think we've proven a lot during this that working from home is possible for some jobs, not all jobs, and it's okay in most circumstances, as long as you've got a good chair.
Okay, who is this week's guest?
This week we have the accidental entrepreneur.
He's accidental
in Matthew Nation.
What do you mean by accidental entrepreneur?
Well, I think a lot of people, in fact, we know that a lot of people set out at some point in their career, I'm going to start my own business. And Like I did.
From a really early age.
Yes, probably too young on reflection. Mm. But Matt actually never thought he was going to start a business. It never crossed his mind that he was going to start a business. And the amazing thing is that he's actually started an incredibly successful business. And he's done it off the bat of recognizing his strengths and weaknesses and putting a lot of his faith into great people.
What I really love from Matt's story is he set out from day one that I'm going to create this organization, this business that's not just about making money. They're going to focus on things that are bigger and more purposeful and purpose-led than just making cash. And what you're going to hear is he's created a business that is very, very different from, I guess, the standard way in which businesses operate today, from a operating rhythm in terms of things like hierarchies and org structures. And I just reckon he's created a blueprint for the business of today and into the future.
And listen to and really enjoy how he's engaged his employees and the effort that he's gone into creating an amazing experience for his employees. And he talks a lot about the employee experience, so we won't ruin any more of that before Matt gets a chance to tell it. So here's Matt Nation. Hope you enjoy it. Blake, do you like stories of people doing?
I love stories of people doing, Nick.
Well, if you out there like stories of people doing and you want us to make more stories of people doing, then like this podcast, subscribe and tell your mates, because the more people we have listening, the more episodes we can make, and that's better for everyone out there who's doing or wants to do.
And as Arnold would say, do it.
I thought he said I'll be back.
Hey Matt, welcome to the Doolanders. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Nick and Blake. Thanks for for letting me come on and, you know, share a story with you. Looking forward
I'm
to
glad
it.
You got the hierarchy of hosts right.
Yeah,
thank you. Thanks very much, Matt.
I just had a hunch that that was the right way to go.
Yeah, you've done well.
Young age before beauty. Hey, we're living in strange days, and I reckon the blur between work and life has never been more hazy. And I reckon that having a purpose-led career or job has never been more important. Mate, tell us a little bit about your business, Nation Partners, and the purpose that you and your team follow and have on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, well, as you say, it's certainly an interesting time at the moment. And, you know, I think even at the start of COVID-19, we kind of looked inwards a little bit to kind of just think about you know, how would we play to our beliefs and, you know, principles over the next few months, we thought at the time. And yeah, look, it's kind of bizarre, I suppose, to be where we are right now. So I'll rewind back to kind of where Nation Partners started and give you just a quick overview. So essentially consulting business, we have been around for a bit over 6 years. I set the business up like with a kind of a clear vision or certainly a desire to kind of, I said right from the start, I wanted to do more than just build a consulting firm. And really wanted to, I suppose, build an organization that did have a much stronger purpose from day one. And so it felt like from a very early stage that we cared more about just getting through, even in the first 6 months or 12 months, and more about, you know, what's the impact we could actually have. So we've kind of wrapped the business around some principles and a purpose around trying to influence for a better and more sustainable future for society and the planet. The planet, you know, for me being of even greater kind of importance in terms of I'm really, really keen to kind of progress our thinking around how we can actually play a greater role in climate change action. And really, you know, have a greater impact than just the work you do, than just turning up, you know, and punching out 8 hours of work. What can we do over and beyond that? So, yeah, Nation Partners is, you know, we've been really fortunate. We've got an amazing crew of people, and everyone in the business wants to do more than just turn up. And that in its own right has put us in an amazing position. You know, over the last few months where I think, you know, lots of businesses have really, really struggled and, you know, we've certainly found it challenging as well. But people have done more than just turn up, and obviously done more than just turn up at home, which is obviously a very, big sort of shift for us all. And, you know, we've tried to really progress some of the things that are really important to us, which, you know, as you know, at the moment is pretty challenging.
Yeah, sure is. Hey, Matt, we'll delve into Nation Partners in a lot more detail shortly. But, you know, if you think about the purpose that you just played back to us, you're a Taswegian. You grew up in Tassie.
Correct.
Is that where it all sort of began or did you want to, you know, make a difference when it comes to climate change and sustainability come a bit later in life? How did that play out?
Yeah, well, certainly where I began, and I really miss not being able to get down there at the moment. Kind of been locked out of Tassie for quite some time now. Mum and Dad are both there. But, yeah, certainly grew up in Tassie. I think all Tasmanians have got a really close connection with the environment, just because it's all around you. And so you really grow up appreciating it or not, which when you move to, in my case, move to Melbourne, you kind of almost appreciate what you did have even more. So certainly grew up with a really strong, just a connection, I suppose. We grew up with a huge backyard. Our second house had a huge backyard that was full of, you know, massive gum trees, and it was massive, and there were goats in a paddock next door. And as you sort of got older, you kind of explored more and more, and behind us there was an awful lot of bushland. And you know, that's a pretty kind of unique upbringing, not something that you can readily get, I suppose, in a lot of other parts of the world. So yeah, definitely had a connection with the environment, was interested in it, and then ended up coming to uni in Melbourne. And I suppose that almost just kind of ended up studying a bunch of subjects. One of them was, you know, sustainability and a range of other subjects that really made me think that, I suppose it was more than just an interest. It was something I kind of felt quite passionately about. I'd say a combination of that, you know, that upbringing in Tassie, and then kind of almost got, a greater interest in kind of pursuing this sort of area through the work I did at uni.
Yeah, yeah.
And the people you meet, which I think is the other key part of it.
And talking about the people that you meet, didn't you have a chance meeting with another famous Taswegian, Senator Bob Brown? In fact, before you answer that, is Taswegian an apt description of people that come from Tasmania, or have I just made that up?
No, I'm happy to go with that.
Okay, all right.
You wouldn't have settled on Tasmanian, Blake?
Prefer Taswegian, sorry.
I think Tasmanians are happy to be called anything these days. I think they're a pretty proud group of people,
yeah.
Which is probably something that, to be honest, wasn't in the psyche of Tasmanians as I was growing up.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the poor cousin to what we call the mainland. But that's changed. I mean, I think anyone that lives in Tassie or goes to Tassie now is blown away by how beautiful it is and how lucky we are, you know, as Australia to have places like Tasmania. So I did meet Bob Brown, and you know, funnily enough, ended up spending quite a bit of time doing uni subjects in Tassie as well, traveling around Tassie looking at quaternary environments, which I couldn't really tell you too much about, to be honest, but it was a great field trip. But one of the subjects that I actually ended up doing around sustainability and was looking at sort of the environmental movements that have existed, ended up looking at the Franklin Dam and was actually doing a subject on essentially, you know, how the Franklin Dam was saved. And just by coincidence was heading down to Tassie on one of the weekends and sat on the plane and Bob Brown sat next to me. And I was kind of pinching myself thinking, oh, wow, like this is just extraordinary. And I obviously had already read quite a lot about him. And he's a pretty controversial Tasmanian, like not someone that a lot of people liked, but just an amazing human being. And, you know, I ended up basically just talking to him flat out for an hour and 15 minutes or whatever it was to get down there. And he was quite happy to share his stories and, you know, kind of give me the real life account. And I did really well in this assignment because I quoted him so many times. I think the lecturer thought that I must have gone out of my way to kind of get an interview with him. But, yeah, I mean, I'll never forget that. I did, you know, again, I think what he's done for the environment is pretty phenomenal. And the green movement, you know, really started around some of these huge, you know, activists and you know, Tasmania's always been right there in the middle of kind of the green movement. So, yeah, pretty amazing thing to do to kind of end up sitting on a plane talking to him.
Yeah, yeah. So talking about movement, maybe not the green movement, but your movement out of uni and into work life, like where did you head? What were you, you know, hell-bent on pursuing something around, you know, the environment or sustainability? Where did you come out of, where'd you go from out of uni?
To be honest, Blake, I had no idea. Like I really enjoyed uni and I loved the subjects I did and the people I met. And I suppose towards the end of uni tried to match up courses with really interesting field trips.
Hang on a sec. Define field trip for us, please, Matt.
Well, the last one was a cracker. Ended up in China for 6 weeks. And in a lot of ways, that was the next kind of point, which really ended up influencing kind of where I went next. So spent 6 weeks in China with initially a small group of people from Melbourne Uni and then a whole group of us for the middle 4 weeks. And, yeah, met some people on that trip who basically said, oh, what are you doing when you, it was my last subject, what are you doing when you finish uni? And I had no idea. And they said, oh, well, we're already working at an environmental consultancy. Why don't you come and join us? And so that was my first job actually at a company that did stack testing, air emissions work called EML and did that for 3 years. And that again was just a really, really kind of key part of the story, I suppose, in terms of, really became a bit of a foundation for continuing to work in the environmental sector. It was obviously something I'd already been really interested in. I probably didn't, to be honest, back then. There was no connection with climate change. It still wasn't really even being spoken about in the way it is now or sustainability or whatnot. It was more a job that kind of matched up with some skills I had and was loosely an environmental consulting role. And so it all kind of made sense and it was heaps of fun. And again, you know, worked with some really great people there and That ended up being again another key step in eventually moving on to Nation Partners many years later.
Talk to us about those skills that you identified back then. You know, that you said you had some skills that lined up with the job at EML, and what were those skills?
Interestingly, the actual, I suppose, technical skills that you needed weren't really that complicated. It was doing the same thing largely each day, just at different factories and, different pollutants and whatever else. The skills that I really, I suppose, started to develop was kind of working with people. And after about 2 years there, I'd been traveling a lot to New South Wales, and the guy who'd been running the New South Wales office left. And so they said, oh, would you like to kind of take a bit of a lead role in kind of the business in New South Wales, which is only like a few people. But all of a sudden it meant you had a lot more responsibility, and it meant you were kind of learning a lot more skills to do with running a business. That was, I suppose, for me, pretty fortuitous that happened. Didn't seem like a big deal at the time, but actually learnt a truckload. And at a young age, even the responsibilities of, getting all your equipment on planes and traveling all around the country. And, you know, when you turned up, you had to have the right equipment or you couldn't get the job done. And, we used to travel around quite a lot with three or four different people. And, you know, you kind of learn a bunch of skills that were about, you know, how do you actually deliver to clients? How do you make some money? How do you make sure that the information you're collecting is kind of accurate? Because most of the work you're doing obviously gets reported back then to the EPA. So there was, there was that aspect to it as well. So, yeah, it was interesting. So that kind of gave me some good skills around or some thinking around how you actually, run a business. And then after that, actually headed off to London for 6 months and did something quite different, which was more about just a life experience. But when I came back, I ended up working for another small environmental consultancy, and the guy who'd been running that business in New South Wales again left just after I started. And so again, there was a small group of us who were kind of left to kind of run what was happening in New South Wales from a Victorian-led business. And so again, you're kind of just building the same skills or building on those skills that you've already started to develop. And I suppose that's, from a very, very early part of my working life, really enjoyed more so the people side of things and the leadership side of things and understanding kind of how it works to actually, kind of get the outcomes that you're looking for, not down in the weeds so much of doing some of the tasks.
Yeah. And at this stage, had you been thinking running my own business, running my own consultancy is something that I want to do, or is this not totally not on your radar at this stage?
No, it wasn't on my radar for pretty much ever. It was something that really only came about quite close to the time that actually set up Nation Partners. It was funny because even well before setting up Nation Partners, I'd gone and done an MBA and, done all these other things. And back then, people would say, really important you have an MBA if you're, ever thinking about running a business or you're in a senior role. And to be honest, I don't believe that. You learn some good skills. Again, you meet some amazing people, and it's probably the network that you form that it's probably more useful than anything. But even back then, doing the MBA, it wasn't on my radar. I was actually really enjoying it. I worked at a company called SKM for 10 years, and I loved it. Absolutely phenomenal place to work. And that's where I probably learned many, many more skills that were more developed than the initial skills around, running a team or a small business. At SKM, you kind of saw how it worked on a grand scale, a much, much bigger business. Started looking at sort of how shareholding might work in a consulting firm and how culture really works and what really makes culture work. So I feel like, that 10 years that I had at SKM, over which time I did the MBA, was probably where I probably developed the skills the most.
Yeah.
And was really lucky to have some incredible mentors whilst I was there. And it was probably, again, not until right towards the end of leaving SKM that I kind of almost had this thought of, oh, maybe I should give this a go.
Yeah. So, well, let's go there, right? So, Matt, we were, you know, we were having a chat before today, and you were talking about, you know, your career at SKM, and you had a successful career there. It was a really great place to work. But perhaps, you know, for you personally, it wasn't as purpose-led or as impactful as, you know, you might have liked. Take us to the end of your career at SKM, and your own business wasn't at the forefront of your mind, you know, further back in your career, but that point where you went, okay, I'm going to do my own thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. SKM was one of the best places I think you could ever work, and I loved it. And the culture there was phenomenal. The focus on developing their team and whatnot was incredible. The thing which probably for me, I suppose, was a bit of a turning point was that they were sold to another company called Jacobs, which is just a massive American firm. And I didn't quite know if that was going to be for me. And I didn't really kind of get this at the time, but I just kind of thought that everything I'd learnt, if you could apply it, and a lot of that was at SKM, if you could apply it in a way that you tried to just then do things even more slightly differently again, that you might be able to create something that is genuinely a different experience for employees. And I probably, you know, have probably from day one focused more on at Nation Partners on what does the employee experience look like, and clearly our clients are massively important. But I've also always had a view that if you attract the brightest minds and essentially have the best people in the industry, everything else kind of takes care of itself. You're not gonna do, you know, you're gonna do great work. And so clients benefit from that massively. And so, yeah, there were some things around which I've kind of been learning as we've gone at Nation Partners, to be honest, because until you do it yourself, you don't quite see the things that maybe could be done better. And I felt like for quite a while, like at a very early stage, we became a B Corp, which you may or may not be familiar with. So
tell our listeners, what is a B Corp?
So basically B Corps, it's a, I suppose, a movement of companies started in America that in America they've actually got B corporations exist. So there's actually you can actually be registered as a B corporation, as a type of business. And it's all really about, you know, shareholders are important, but it's about recognizing that society and employees and the environment are critically important, and just making money is not enough. That shouldn't be your purpose, which, as you know, is the main agenda for most corporates. That's what you've got to do. Yep. You've got to maximize your profits for your shareholders. So B corporations have to go through this B impact assessment tool, and basically you've got to meet the highest social environmental standards that you could possibly meet in the world. And so we did that at a very, very early stage of the business. A good friend of mine, Jane Martino, had said, oh, look, you know, I reckon this is something you should have a look at, after we almost just kicked off. She was running a startup at the time that was already a B Corp. And it was interesting. It actually became something that really shaped who we are. It gave us some scaffolding or foundations or whatnot for kind of thinking about things that you wouldn't otherwise think about, because when you set up a business, what you most think about is making money.
Yeah.
Like, because you've got to, you're either going to fail, or not. And you know, everyone reels off all these stats about how, you know, all these businesses, number of businesses that fail in the first 2 years or whatever. So what I feel like, for us, becoming a B Corp made us realize there was something bigger to this. And yes, if we got through the first couple of years, great. But in fact, you don't want to do that to the detriment of kind of establishing the purpose and the beliefs of really what you're driving for as a business. So I feel like from a really, really early stage, we identified what those principles were. And I've kind of a few times with people sort of mentioned that it's sort of like, a lot of organizations sort of bolt on kind of boards and CSR initiatives and a whole range of things. I feel like it's been in our DNA since day one. And as the business grows, and I'd say we've just got to this point where, you can say that you direct 4 or 5%, whatever, of your profits towards, social environmental causes. And when you're not making much money, that doesn't really mean anything. But when you're 6 to 7 years in and all of a sudden that is a significant or could be a significant amount of money, then all of a sudden you can actually do something with that, which is quite impactful. And so, yeah, I felt like we've really had, these things kind of in our DNA from the very start. And, you know, again, we haven't got everything right, that's for sure. But we're slowly getting all the things in place that support, I suppose, what we've been looking to achieve from the very start.
So just rewinding a little bit back on that, Matt, because it's great to hear how, determined you were from the outset to make sure that the business had purpose and the people you brought on were the best. What were the small steps that occurred for you to leave SKM, and what were people telling you at the time? Was it the right time of life to be making decisions like this to go into business? You wanted to hire the best people, which to a lot of business owners would just be going, oh, but that just costs so much money. How were you able to overcome those, you know, the voice on your shoulder and the voice of your friends or people telling you don't do it?
Wow. great question. It's, I don't know, I'd have to say that part of it is you kind of just dig deep, and you, for me anyway, like I wasn't always going to be an entrepreneur, you know, from the moment I left school or uni or whatnot. I felt like I'd learnt lots that could be applied in a different way. And in some ways, you know, whether or not, SKM was to be bought out or not, it probably just was a trigger that made you think about some things and kind of almost brought forward maybe something that would have happened at some point anyway, a couple of years down the track. Yeah, absolutely. Everyone was saying to me, you're mad. You know, there's a great career here for you. Friends were saying, what a huge risk to be taking. Sophie was already born and Mia was not too far in the corner. I just felt like, why not? why not have a crack? And that's in some ways the way I live life. And I was prepared to fail. And I think that's probably, one of the most important things is that I kind of didn't feel like if I failed that there'd be a whole heap of shame or anything that would go with it. I would have taken that on the chin and probably have gone back to a similar sort of organization. But I just thought, you know, why not? I mean, you know, not that life's too short or anything like that. It was more just that it feels like if you learn a whole heap of things, why not try and apply them in a way that could be even better than how you've seen them applied in the past. And, you know, we weren't, you know, financially in this amazing position that, you know, would have allowed us to kind of fail comfortably. But equally, we felt like we could just have a go at something. And my wife, Brie, was just so supportive. Like she was, you know, basically we'd agreed that I'd give it a go for 12 months. And the worst that could happen was that we'd lose 12 months salary. Which of course, even that was a bit naive at the time because you start spending a lot of money quite quickly and whatnot. And yeah, I think that, being prepared to fail forward and having a crack at something and being prepared to, and we're doing this at the moment, you know, and we will continue to do this, I think, for the whole Nation Partners journey. We just keep exploring and looking to see if there might be a better way to do specific things that we're doing. And I think that I felt quite comfortable with the relationships I had in the industry. So had already had some really great clients who were prepared to back us. And that makes a huge difference. So off the back of, you know, strong relationships that you know that, you could still fail, but you've probably got a bit of a, I suppose a safety blanket there or whatever to kind of cushion the first 12, 24 months.
And at what point in that first 12, 24 months did you sort of get a feeling, all right, this is not going to fail, or I like it so much, I don't want it to fail? You know, what was the thought processes during that period?
Do you know, it's so interesting because there's just been something every year that has rattled us all. And I think, again, that's probably the life of the small business. I mean, clearly COVID-19, I mean, in March and April, I was very concerned about what impact this might have on us. And you do, because it's still a you know, small, medium sized business, and personally you're quite connected to it from a financial perspective. There's an awful lot you have to kind of work through and really make, you know, do a whole range of things to really protect the business. But, you know, this is a really extreme example, but there's been something every year. You know, for us starting in Victoria, doing a lot of work with the Victorian government, we found that, there was an election not too far, not about, you know, 12 months or so into the business's life. And that has a big impact, not something you as a very small business, you plan for particularly well. So it's really interesting, Nick. I would say I feel more confident than I've ever felt in the business today. And I couldn't have even said that 4 months ago. And so it's fascinating that just how things sort of change and how dynamic smaller businesses are. I don't think there's ever been a point. We've invested really heavily in the business every year. It's grown really quickly. And I think when you're doing that, you don't have the luxury of almost stepping back that much and going, oh, well, I don't need to worry about it. You know, for the next 12 months, I think we've nailed it. I think we're there. We've just every year almost pushed in the team. I talk a lot about pushing the boat out, and people must get sick of hearing it, but I think we've just continued to push the boat out again and again and again and again. And, you know, I think even, in the few months before COVID-19 started, we'd taken on 7 new employees. And obviously as March hit, I thought, oh no, what have we done? And we stuck to our guns, and we were so, you know, we were desperate to make sure we kind of honored the commitment that we'd made to people to start at Nation Partners and to really, hopefully give them the best start they could to a career at Nation Partners, which has been really challenging, obviously. But again, it kind of felt like we were sticking to the principles and the beliefs that we've got. And adapting as we have to adapt. But again, you know, even back in March, I kind of thought, wow, like we've really put ourselves under a lot of pressure here. But I feel like, you know, to date, we've certainly got through this year really well. And I think it's almost been that stress test that we've never really had to this extent. And you can be quite comfortable, I think, if you can get through a stress test of this sort, of this type, that you've probably got yourself to a point that you probably don't need to worry quite as much.
So take us through.
I'm hoping.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're in. You know, isn't that amazing? Just in the last few months that you feel that level of surety and security. So mate, take us through that evolution of the building of the business, profit with purpose. Now, I reckon you do things in your business that many, many businesses, I'd say the vast majority of businesses, don't do. Love to hear about how you empower your people and your team and some of the ways of working and what you've done that is different to most other businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we've talked a lot about doing things differently and I suppose have quite a struggle to define what that is. So, you know, having a really clear purpose, being profit with purpose is a bit different, but, you know, equally lots of companies are doing that, which is great. Our beliefs and whatnot are all the right ones for us, but equally they're not, you know, they're not that different to what lots of organizations would do. I think we've really, really tried. I think we've really worked out what that means in the last couple of years. So we've gone down a path probably 3 or 4 years ago. We talked about distributed leadership. Like we were really keen to not have hierarchy. And if you're, I don't know, Google or LinkedIn or someone, it's probably all works quite well. To have lots of dynamic teams and whatnot, but to do what we do, which is, it has a high level of hierarchy to it in terms of selling time to clients. And then to say, but we're not going to have any hierarchy in the business. It's a bit odd. And we really struggled with, well, how would we make that work? We're really fortunate to, end up with an org design guru, who used to work at Stone and Wood, Dale O'Brien. And so she's been in-house for a couple of years. So that's pretty different to have a small business, to have an org design guru on, you know, on staff. And so for 2 years, we've worked with her, I think, to turn all our ideas into reality, because I think we knew what we wanted to be, but we had no idea how to do it. And so what that's allowed us to do is co-design a huge number of things so that the outcomes that we're looking to achieve as a business and what the actions are that need to feed into that. We've, you know, co-designed how we actually want to organize ourselves. So again, you know, people talk about sort of flat structures and all these sorts of things. So we call ourselves a teal organization. So again, very much self-managed. So individuals really are they manage themselves. They don't have a boss. Staff are empowered to kind of be curious and look for opportunities, not be guided by a really rigid strategy that says, you know, we must only work for these clients. We utilize something called the advice process. So again, rather than deferring to management, to make decisions, which is really nice, isn't it? Really safe for a lot of people to kind of go, well, I didn't make the decision. We rely on the advice process, which kind of empowers staff to seek advice. And there's a kind of a framework for doing that. And then making a decision, you don't have to listen to the advice. You can make a decision based on what you think we should do. And we'll all get around and support you as long as you've sought the right advice. And so again, really empowers people to kind of, I suppose, pursue their passions and interests. We've just sort of moved into thinking about how our way of working applies to business strategy and business planning. And again, it's quite different. So, you know, there's not this top down need for someone, myself, to kind of go, well, this is where we're going to be in 5 years' time. This is the 5-year plan strategy. It's about getting everyone together and asking people, you know, what's your vision for where Nation Partners should be in 5 years' time? You know, how do you think we could play to our strengths? Where do you think the opportunities might be? And that really empowers staff to play a key role in really directing where the business goes. There are lots of things like that we do. We've just launched a system called Bright Minds, which is all about how we reward people and how people progress through their career. And again, you know, a staff appointed panel essentially have a role to play in reviewing what people are asking for from a reward and progression perspective. So we have a reward pool. We're super transparent in terms of providing information to the business on how we're performing. We've got a break even point that we talk about every month, and anything over and above that is up for potentially going to the reward pool. And then we actually disclose, communicate what the reward pool is before every 6 months, asking people what reward, which could be not just money, it could be anything, could be learning and development over and above what's sort of standard. Yeah. Could be someone on the phone this morning, she said to me, could my reward be getting Uber Eats delivered every night for the next couple of months while we're in lockdown? And you know, getting people to think creatively about, again, thinking about the people that work at Nation Partners are purposeful. What else could you do over and above, you know, bonuses in terms of, you know, volunteering, additional time, you know, working for not-for-profits, doing pro bono work, you know, working on industry bodies, a whole range of things that people are interested in so they can actually pursue those interests.
And who decides on the allocation of the reward pool?
So, yeah, really good question. Not the panel. So the panel review the ask, which each employee puts in, and each employee seeks, you know, feedback and advice from their peers. And the panel's ultimate responsibility is to make sure the reward pool gets used, and that it's not oversubscribed. So they don't approve or reject an ask, but if an ask is well over what, you know, seems reasonable, because it's 50% of the reward pool, to say, then the panel would provide advice back to the, you know, the team member to say, hey, you know, this is what the panel, what advice the panel is providing. So, gives again staff an opportunity, because not everyone will get it right, to kind of calibrate their own asks. And, you know, we've recently just provided a breakdown of sort of what all the salary bands and what in the business are as well. So there's just this really high level of transparency about, you know, kind of what people get paid at the top and bottom end of each band as you work through your career.
There's a fair chance you're going to be flooded with resumes as the millions of listeners start listening to this episode.
with requests to join Nation Partners so they can have Uber Eats every day.
Yeah, yeah. Just inquiring first about the reward pool.
Yeah.
And 50% of what? What is it again?
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, and look, it's interesting because the what initially attracted me to become a B Corp was that it's really attractive for employees. It's actually, and not, so it's not so much a rubber stamp. It's more about what are the principles you live by. And when you're talking to potential employees about what you stand for, it's a pretty compelling story. And so I think B Corp was an early part of our journey where people could kind of go, oh, yeah, I've heard something about B Corps. Yeah, they're great. I wouldn't mind being part of one of those. I think we're creating our own story now. So some of these things that we're talking about in terms of, you know, being a teal organisation and, you know, our Bright Minds system and, you know, eventually what our shareholding system looks like as well, they're all things that people will look at and go, that just makes sense. Why aren't more people doing that? But it's like, it's been really hard. Like it's by no means been easy, but it's been worth it in terms of where we've got to so far.
Also feels like there might be a book release coming out.
Oh, maybe Nick, I'm not sure. Probably not my thing. I might launch a podcast. That might be my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you call it?
I don't know. Nothing as cool as the Dolanders.
No.
It's a ripper.
You've had fantastic growth with the business over the last 6 years. You know, recently we were talking and you were talking about the creation of a foundation. Tell us a little bit about that.
It feels like all these things have really only just started to really become real. So we have donated an awful lot of money, both in terms of money and time, to a range of different causes over the first 6 years of the business. And I reckon about 2 years ago, we just started kind of going, how could we be more impactful? Like it's, you know, like, and it's interesting. It's a bit of a challenge a lot of B Corps have got. So talked a lot within the B Corp community about, you know, how could you be more impactful? And you would have heard of, you know, lots of businesses like Thank You, that's a B Corp.
Yep.
And you probably know where their profits go. Like they're really, they do an amazing job. It's a bit weird when you're a professional services business and you're not selling a product as such that you buy in the supermarket. You're selling a service and then thinking through how collectively we direct our efforts and donations towards something that matters. So it would be at least 2 years ago, we sort of started getting this, you know, strong sort of sense that we needed to kind of direct that effort, you know, much more than we were. So we started talking about what's our thing, which now irritates the hell out of me. But the idea was that, you know, we thought, if you think of thank you, that we needed to land on something. What's the thing that we will direct our energy to from an impact and a donations perspective, giving perspective? So it's interesting. Again, just recently that started to kind of come. It started to land on something for us. So we feel like we've definitely, as a business, been starting to look much more about how we can get involved in climate change action. And there's a lot of interest in the business around that. So that's probably one of the strongest things for us at the moment, but it's not the only thing. And what we're looking at doing at the moment is, yep, setting up a foundation. And we've already got, again, some really sort of clear guidelines around how funds are put into that. So this is the first year where, over and above, I suppose, the discretionary donations and things that we make, which sort of total sort of $15,000 to $20,000 a year, we're going to continue doing that, but put aside $2,000 a month that go into this foundation, and then 5% of all our profits over and above our break-even point will also go to this foundation. So we've kind of created a vehicle that we can actually do some pretty amazing things with. And again, it's something that's only sort of coming to life right now. We've done lots of good things that we should be really proud of, but we have just, again, thought that we could actually do much more, and we'd love to be able to measure the impact we have. So again, we've kind of, from the early days, you know, you don't have much money to put towards these sort of things. And we sort of feel like we're at this sort of, turning point at the moment where, we actually are likely to be able to direct more energy and more funds towards something. And, you know, climate change is likely to be a key part of that. But there'll be other things that people in the business have got an interest in. And again, we haven't finalized this at the moment, but it's very likely that the whole business will come together on a 6-monthly basis or similar. And just like we work out the ask and where the reward pool goes, we'll be asking staff, well, where's our foundation money going?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, what are the things happening right now that we think we could do more of? And yeah, as part of that, we also want to sort of align a lot of the volunteering work we do, and eventually sort of pro bono work and things as well.
Love it. And that last one, we do appreciate, like Nick's a, you know, small to medium sized business owner. I've been dealing with small businesses for many, many years. It's bloody hard work. So what has enabled you to keep on doing and keeping on, you know, pushing those hundreds of boats out into the water again and again and again? Like what's continues to get you out of bed in the morning and gives you the resilience to keep on keeping on?
I think your family, having a supportive family has been, for me, one of the most important things. And like I said, right at the very start of Nation Partners, if I didn't have Bree saying, give it a go, it would have been really easy not to have given it a go. So I think a really supportive partner is phenomenal. I'm definitely someone who just likes to try things. And I've definitely got a greater appetite for risk than a lot of people. And I think that really helps. Like I do, you know, I'm sure you guys have read a million articles about how entrepreneurial Americans are. And it's something which I do think we don't do particularly well out in Australia. I think when we fail, we fail. and we're not very comfortable with that. So I think even having a bit of a mindset, and I certainly had this from the start of, I suppose, setting up Nation Partners, failing was going to be okay. And thankfully we haven't. But we still fail every day in lots of little ways, and you know, there are some big ones and there are some ones that aren't as critical, but being okay with that is really important. I think the other key thing for me, I've just been blessed with the people I've had around me from a coaching and business mentoring perspective. And that's been friends and family, friends of family. It's been an amazing kind of network of people. And I suppose in recent times, we've benefited from having sort of a coach in the business. I've still lent on external people to support in a whole range of areas. And I think just having that network, because there's no one person that you can lean on for all the challenges that you face. But I feel like just about anything could happen and I'd know who I could go to. And sometimes when you have those conversations with people and you don't solve your problems, but just by talking about them, you kind of reframe them. You think about, you know, potential solutions and things that you could do. I think for me, I do think a lot, and probably too much about things. And for me, having a sounding board or multiple sounding boards that sometimes tell me you just shouldn't think about that much, is really helpful. And I've done that, you know, with people I've run with as well. You know, I've done a lot of running and often talk while I'm running. And again, those conversations have been quite, you know, important for me in terms of almost, testing ideas and often just working through things that really aren't that big a deal. But you kind of get stuck on things. And that's something I'm still learning today and trying to get better at because, yeah, I think that's just a tendency I certainly have, is to sometimes get stuck on things.
So to close up, there'll be plenty of people listening to this going, well, one, who knows what their job situation is right now, and maybe they're starting to weigh up their options. Maybe there is a better way. Maybe they're starting to think a little bit like you were at the end of SKM. What's your advice to those people?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because some people are fortunate enough to be able to choose in maybe what they do next. And for the people that can choose what they do next, I think the more you can really think about what you want to do and what you're really interested in and potentially how you play to your strengths, you're going to end up doing something that you're probably going to be a lot more successful at and a lot happier at doing. And I think, you know, we've got people who are in that situation, which, you know, all of us are. I think we're super fortunate because we can choose. So I think, you know, for anybody that's looking at their next role, really thinking about what it is that they're looking to achieve and what they really want to, I suppose, do in life, is always a great thing and a very fortunate position to be in. So, yeah, I'd certainly encourage people to do that. And I think there's always stepping stones. So if you're not that fortunate, sometimes just getting back into doing work is the best thing you can possibly do. Because just being around people and finding out more about yourself and whatnot is really important as well for kind of maybe thinking about those things, about what might be next.
That's great advice.
Love it. Thank you, mate. Well, built this amazing vehicle for change in Nation Partners over the last 6 years. And, you know, as you say to your team on a day-to-day basis or week-to-week basis, that you are sick of hearing yourself. But we can't wait to see what you do with all of those boats that you've pushed out into the ocean and see what happens next. Thanks so much for telling your story on the Doolanders.
Thanks, Nick and Blake.
Well done.
And go the Doolanders.
Thanks, Matt. Matt.
See you guys.
Ciao. Love
this place. Love this place. Love this place. Love this place.
So that's Matty Nation.
Smart. The thing that I really love about Matt's story, he was super clear from the get-go that he was going to create a business, a place, an environment where he was going to attract, as he likes to say, the brightest minds in the industry. Like, if you think about his professional services business, what they're all about is, you know, making sure that he's building a better sustainable future for society and for the planet. people who are chartered with wanting to do that, want to come to work and do amazing things, but also work in an amazing environment. And I love his creativity in terms of creating that space and that place of work.
Yeah, I really like that. And he thinks really long and hard and doesn't stop with, you know, what does the employee experience look like, but continues to look at it. And it really, really takes on that, you know, have the best people, you'll get the best results. And he's not scared of, you know, what a lot of people would be when you're starting a business. The wage cost is the biggest cost.
Yeah.
Professional services, that's pretty much your only cost.
Yeah.
And he just goes and gets the best people because he trusts those people to get the best results.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. I said in the intro, like, I think he's created this amazing blueprint for businesses of today and into the future. If you think about the things that he's focused on around distributed leadership, you know, the whole co-design around the org structure, got a guru out of Stone and Wood Brewing Company. Not sure how he managed to extract someone out of the brewing company, but anyway, managed to. You know, they've got this advice process. So leaders within the business go to this group to seek advice, but hey, you're chartered with making that decision. Don't come to us for the decision. You make that decision. The way that they consider reward and recognition, and you know, there's a panel of people in the business that just review that ask. I think it's the way forward. Yeah. People want to be able to have that level of insight and input into businesses that they will work in the future.
Yeah. It might not work for all types of businesses, but certainly for that style of business, it clearly works.
Yeah.
For him. And again, just an amazing story of someone who never thought they were going to be an entrepreneur, never thought they were going to start a business, but then did it in a very, very considered and mature way that not a lot of other businesses would possibly do. He could have just taken his corporate experience and just done, well, I'll just do a smaller version of the same thing. That's the easy way to do it. But he just sort of cherry-picked the best ideas that he had and came up with some great ideas of his own and probably his team's ideas.
Yeah. And as you said, let's just keep pushing boats and into the ocean.
Yeah.
I really love that saying. And in fact, since we recorded this app, like, that stuck with me. Like, just keep trying stuff. Keep having a go. Things will work. Hey.
What boats are you pushing out to the ocean right now?
Well, this boat.
Oh, good.
What do you mean? Oh, good. Well, this is okay. So the Doolanders may not be a boat. It might be a dinghy at this point in time, but who knows how big this boat might get.
That's right. Or where it may land.
Let's go. Let's turn it into a I was going to say a cruise ship. No one's going on cruises anymore. A massive container ship.
We'll call it the Diamond Landers.
Hey, we talked, you know, Matt's business is focused around sustainability.
Yep.
Next week's guest is Rachel Lowry.
Yeah. The Chief Conservation Officer of WWF.
What does WWF stand for, Nick?
It's the Worldwide Fund for Nature.
Now, how's this for a piece of doing or what Rachel does? Rachel is trying to protect nature. That's what she does.
Yeah. It's a big ask. Tune in next week. This episode was Matt Nation. Hope you enjoyed it.
See you, Doolanders.
Bye.
Hey, Doolanders. If you want to hear more inspiring stories and have this show grow to more and more listeners, do us a favour. Can you like, share, rate and review the Doolander podcast on wherever you get your podcast from?
Wherever good pods are cast.
That's where...